Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Hutton the Clock.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena because the Predators are in action tonight hosting the Calgary Flames starting at 7 o'clock. Willie Donick joins the fun. Willie D., how we doing?
Hey, guys. Good to see you.
Happy to have you on board.
Hanging out here at Barrel House. How about that?
It's a great day.
Yeah.
It's a great day.
A little bit.
And it's also a great day because it's Hutton o'clock. Jonathan Hutton.
Oh, yes.
Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow joins us. Hutton, always appreciate your time and always appreciate our visits every single Wednesday. Hutton, we started the show with this. You know, Titans are playing the worst team in the league in the Carolina Panthers this weekend, and even against the lowly Carolina Panthers, I still don't feel very confident about the Titans' chances of winning this game. But I'm interested to hear your perspective of where the Titans fan base is at. Do you think the Titans fan base even cares about winning games anymore?
Yeah, they care. They care. If you take calls, I'm sure they care. That's why everyone is their heads on a pitchfork. They care about winning games. Here's the other thing I think that kind of dulls the losing conversation is, and you guys jump in if you think I'm way off base here, but isn't it just typical Titans that they trade up and draft Will Levis last year in the second round, and this year they could have a top five pick and they'll pass on the quarterback because they have Will
classic.
Levis. And
please don't let that happen.
Well, I mean, Mace, we're headed towards it, man. At this stage, they may have the number one pick. Let's be real about it. But I'm tongue in cheek there. But what they'll do is they'll draft an offensive tackle, and that's the best case scenario for the way this offensive line looks. But it's also rinse, repeat, same song, different verse. The Titans fan base has been there, and it's just kind of played out by now, where we're going to be evaluating offensive linemen again. Or debating whether or not to trade back, and then you end up you pass on the O lineman. Of course, you pass on the quarterback, and of course, you pass on Marvin Harrison Jr. It's a mess, and it's just my grandfather used to say, "I'd rather laugh than cry." I think that's kind of how the fan base is right now.
100%. Where are you on Mike Vrabel and this coaching staff?
I think Vrabel's a good coach. I do. For all of the dissecting of what we have seen this year, we weren't really doing that to him at this time last year. It was all John Robinson. And it's fair now that he's getting criticism. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve criticism. I'm not saying he can't be on the hot seat. I'm just not willing to say, yeah, he should be fired. There's a lot of good that has happened while he has been here. And as long as he's locked in, and he wants to be here and working for Amy Adams Strunk, I would want him here as the Titans head coach, at least to the point where we've seen the results that we've seen and the attitude, the identity ring true. What we're not seeing now is that. It's the exact opposite of that. And I agree. It deserves questioning. Does it deserve the emotional response of he's got to go? No. Not yet, but hey, he's got to be willing to evaluate and self-reflect and look and know, hey, some of these coaches aren't getting it done. And, discussing, how close they are on trying to block an extra point and discussing effort and how good the special teams are, or chatting about what could be, a good defense, but it's not good because of this or that, and it's all execution. And then offense has just been a complete disaster. It's got to be more than just execution of plays, especially for a coach that won Coach of the Year, and deservedly so, for getting the most out of a roster that had turned over multiple times. And we're not seeing that this year. That is deserving of criticism and tough questions. Is it deserving of a pink slip? No. But, hey, let me finish by saying this. I wasn't expecting John Robinson to get fired on December the 6th last year. And it came down to Amy Adams Strunk telling us she had already made up her mind. So there are always surprises around the turn, around the corner, and at every turn, it goes back to ownership and what they want or don't want to do.
Now, Hutt, does he have enough money in the bank in the sense of, okay, if because we've seen this before, ownership say, hey, listen, you need to move away from said coach, and the head coach don't want to, and then hence the head coach gets fired. Has Vrabel built up enough to if Amy comes to him and says, hey, listen, some things need to be changed coaching-wise, does he have enough to say, no, let's run it back. I believe in the coaches that I have. I'm going to give them another shot. Has he built up enough equity to be able to do that? Because I thought Mike Mularkey, with what he did with that roster that he inherited, he did enough. And obviously it wasn't, because they end up firing him. Does Vrabel have enough built up to kind of go against that?
Look, Mace, I don't think he can just go completely against it. Mm-hmm. He didn't go against the Downing firing altogether. He just did at the time, right? So do changes have to be made? Yes. Is he willing to make changes? Yes. My whole thing, if I'm ownership, is just like, okay, what's our plan now? If you're keeping a guy, tell us why, explain why, and why it's not on the coach, why it's not on development. Why is Chigakonkwo not the guy that he was sold to be this past offseason? Like those are the questions I would be asking, more than just like, hey, why are you loyal to this coach? So it's got to me, it's player and position specific. And now we're going back to, I mean, if he wants to take it for the offensive line, he can raise his hand and say he wanted Andre Dillard. Mm-hmm. He can raise his hand and say that he chose to sign the center to a 4-year contract. Like those are real answers. But at the same point, Mace, there has to be a development and accountability. And if I'm sitting here with you telling you, hey, I don't think Vrabel should be fired, I think some of these coaches got to go. There's got to be some turnover, some new life. And also just an energy factor that says, hey, this was not acceptable. And in the NFL, you're on the hot seat for one bad year. I mean, he's already getting questions about that. If he feels like that's how he feels about that and his job security. And the NFL, heads roll whenever the offense is this awful. And it's not about that they're bad. It's how bad they've been. And they can't even run the football with this offensive line and with this, with the way this offense is currently constructed. That's going nowhere fast. And because of that, the acceptable answer, while there can be several, the one that can't be is, yeah, we're just going to run it back with the coaches we have because it's not on us. It's everyone is to blame. Everyone is at fault, including Mike Vrabel.
Now, we looked at last game because we have had texters and callers try to, you know, sort of differentiate. I can't get that word out.
Differentiate.
Yeah. There we go. Between last week's and this week's game. And my thing with last week's game, it had everything to do with keeping yourself in the hunt. Because if you're 4-6, it looks better than 3-7. And you still have an opportunity, albeit a long shot, but you still have an opportunity to put yourself in a position to win the division. Because we know how this division can get, guys. Teams can go on rolls and they, you know, go on winning streaks and can end up finding themselves like Jacksonville did last season, winning the division on the last game of the season. But I look at this Carolina game as a must-win, not because it has anything to do with the draft, not because it has anything to do with a potential playoff berth, but because you don't want to now be seen outside of Nashville as an incompetent team, a bad team. You're going against what many believe is the worst team in the NFL right now, in the Carolina Panthers. If they come to your house and win, now people are not looking at Carolina as the worst team. They're looking at you as the worst team.
The Titans are included in the mix, like with the Cardinals and the Panthers and the Patriots, mm-hmm. right? And they already are, by the way.
Good company.
You know, that's just they're already in that company. That's how bad they've been. But I agree with you, Mace. Like the perception is different from the outside looking in, from the 30,000-foot view of what many of the national media will be looking at. You know, but besides Patriots, Giants, Titans, and maybe it's on the same plane too. Good company. Patriots, Giants, Titans, Panthers this Sunday in Week 12, and who would have thought we would have lumped those games in to the worst of the weekend? You can't lose the Carolina Panthers, Mace, but they also can't be this bad on the road, and they have been. They've been really good at home. 28 points, 27 points. Like they actually score at home, and for what it's worth, they are competitive against bad teams. So they shouldn't come in here and just be an obvious loss. Like I don't see I can come up with ways that the Titans win this game. It's when they play average teams that they don't meet that criteria, and they can compete against teams that are very much like them. I mean, the Panthers are going and going and taking their lumps with the rookie quarterback. The Titans just don't have an offensive line. We know that's the case in Carolina as well, and we've seen not just a regression, but a virtual just poof and it's gone of the run game, just evaporation, because they've gone from not just regressing to over the last couple of weeks, it's just not there. And 18 sacks in the last eight games for the defense. They have five takeaways in the last eight games. That's the worst in the NFL. They're facing a rookie quarterback that they should be able to get the ball from, but they have been telling us they're not going to be able to do that for, and this was a coaching staff that, that really pounded the pavement about getting more turnovers this offseason. And then, you know, Trevor Lawrence that didn't have a single rushing touchdown until last week, and he had two on Sunday. So I take this into account when I say anything's possible against this Panthers team. That's how bad the Titans are. And I also think a lot of the sentiment that we're discussing where it's just kind of like, you know, Vrabel shouldn't go, but, you know, coach has got to go. I think I'm probably like many of those that are listeners or callers to your show. Like I think that's likely the sentiment internally, but lose to Carolina at home and who knows? I mean, that's one of those that you just, it feels like the Chargers game, Willie, Mace, Carolina, the Chargers game at home this year, you could feel there was a bit of pressure there where you got to go win this game.
Yeah.
And then you had Levis's first game where he's, you know, piled onto that. And this, they return home. It feels like forever. And that pressure's still there, even though it's a team that's not going anywhere.
And the only reason I bring that up, Hutt, is because I think once the narrative changes nationally, I think that's when the pressure starts to heat up. Because if it's just a local thing where some fans are, you know, displeased with what's going on, they don't like what's going on, they're disappointed, that's one thing. I think if it starts becoming a national narrative that that's a bad team, that the coaches on that coaching staff isn't made for this team and they need to go in another direction. I think once that changed from a national standpoint, that's when coaches starts to get fired.
Well, that and, you know, that's whenever the reports begin to contradict themselves, right? Mm-hmm. You've got Breer and Russini who are saying that Amy Adams-Frank loves Mike Vrabel and, you know, is glowing about him over the offseason or whatever it might be. And that can be true. But that's when you have the updated tweets and posts from different reports. Or you know, the other thing that here's what's very cyclical. And the low-hanging fruit, they'll go back to the well on the New England rumor is what they'll do. That's what begins to really circle the wagons and the questions that will begin to be answered. Because while I don't think that Vrabel is just looking to tap out and look for the easy way out, you know, what it will cause, Mace, is for a definitive answer before an answer is given of, why won't you say this? Why won't you say that? Are you in? Where's Amy Adams-Strunk? Where's Rand Carthon's voice in all of this? Mike Vrabel's the figurehead. He's the guy. He is making the decisions because he's the one talking. He's going to be getting all those questions, to your point.
Talking to Jonathan Hutton. And, Hutt, it's interesting you mentioned the draft scenario, and I kept thinking as you were saying that, and the theme was you have a high pick and an opportunity to get a quarterback, and you think you've already spent enough on quarterbacks that you have to pass. How about Carolina that traded for the first pick? They're 1-9.
Yeah.
There seem to be some questions about their quarterback. They could have the first pick, but they don't have the pick. They don't have the pick. How about that?
It's unbelievable is what it is. And also on top of it.
The Bears could have what? Picks 1 and 3?
Yeah.
1 and 4?
Two top 5 picks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the other thing too, now Frank Reich is all of a sudden being mentioned as being on the outs, which is also just, as the NFL turns here, there's a lot of storylines for April that are coming up on in late November for the Titans and the Panthers. And in one case, the investment is way bigger than the one that the Titans made. So there is that to compare to what the Titans got. Will Levis, who Mel Kiper would have selected number one overall.
Okay, so there's always Mel.
Yes.
So, Hutt, here's something I know will be a theme down the stretch, and that is guys that you're trying to identify that will be a part of the team going forward. Name me a guy that you're looking for that right now we don't know. It could go either way, that you would like to see solidify his spot on the team for next year.
So on defense for me, it would be solidify his spot, meaning like I could see where he's not back. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Show me a guy that you need to do well, but right now you're not sure if he belongs on the team next year. Like I'm thinking of a lot of guys like Christian Fulton, I thought might have been coming out of the doghouse until last week, and now it's kind of like I don't see it.
Yeah, there's some back and forth though. I don't know how he plays his way. I think if he plays great, he's out.
But
you know,
that's a position where you never have enough of them.
Oh, I know.
They don't have anybody else.
Yeah.
Right now, so that to me, that's a classic one of how does it look in the last 7 weeks, but. I don't know that he's going to stay, but that's just one example. But what comes to mind, because if you're Rand Carthon, you're like, please, somebody emerge so I don't have 50 holes to fill with, less than a full complement of draft picks, et cetera.
Well, I would lump this in and just say, Willie, they signed a lot of backups that they thought were not done developing into who they are. Arden Key, Alshire, just defensively, guys that can be done, you can do away with in a year if they're not the guy. But they really need, though, they need to hit on one or two of those guys. Offensive line's the same way, but I'm not lumping them in because, again, there's another turnover coming up front in that regard. And maybe it comes down to this, too. Solidifying just what we're going to see from Tajay Spears. Because it's not that he's not on the roster by any means. That's why I asked you the question. But he and Chigakonkwo, I think, are big pieces to the puzzle next year, whether you like it or not. And they're going to be factors that they're not going to be replaced in the offseason because they don't have enough. They don't have enough in the draft to go and replace those guys. And they're not going to invest a ton of money in running back if they can invest a ton of money in the offensive line, for instance. When they have Tajay Spears on a rookie contract. Again, just an example. Same thing at tight end. If they believe in Chigakonkwo and they're willing to give him another year, I don't think they try to go over the – unless they're going after Bowers, they're not going to go after or go over the top for Chigakonkwo. They need to really be making a turn towards the end of the year over the second half of the season. And, we're already seeing Spears get his share – I wonder if he gets his share of just the offense now instead of just the share of the snaps.
I'm very curious to see how they use him down the stretch.
Yeah, and that's not directing the answer, I guess, to your question enough there, but I would just go to the vets that they brought in that were backups last year for good teams that have not been anything but just a steady guy who can come in and play for you if someone went down ahead of them, which is how the other teams treated them. And I haven't seen enough to say, yeah, they warrant more of a long-term, maybe 2-3 year contract.
Last one for you, Hutton. Will Levis was knocked out at practice yesterday, and Paul Kaharsky tweeted that it was a super light walkthrough. But what is your concern level for Will Levis potentially this week and even for the rest of the season behind this offensive line?
My concern level is the same for any quarterback behind this offensive line.
Yeah.
I mean, I think even Malik Willis was getting sacked on all of his career snaps, like 18.5% of the time he was taking a sack. It's just a duck and cover is what it is. It's like the old tornado drill at my elementary school back in the day. The deal with Levis is he's going to be banged and bruised. And, you want to talk about battle-tested. This guy's going to take his lumps.
For real.
I think he plays. I think he's tough. Tannehill's tough, too. And This is where it gets really just strange, is if you go into a week where you don't know if we're going to see Levis or Tannehill play based on injuries, and Tannehill's, you know, if he's back there, he's going to get hurt again too. It's just it's how bad this O-line is, Caroline, to say, like, I'm concerned for any three of them. And because of that, they're not going to move the football. That's just what they are right now offensively. And the defense doesn't get the ball back. They don't set up the offense to where they're at least getting three. And even Nick Folk was having a bad day in Jacksonville because he wasn't needed. I mean, it's just, yeah, the offensive line is going to play a factor in any of these quarterbacks' health concerns. And most recently, it's Will Levis.
I mean, you're going to have to get to a point where you're putting Jeffrey Simmons in at quarterback at some point. Like, this assembly line of quarterbacks that the Titans are probably going to go through with this lousy offensive line. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow. Hut, appreciate you as always. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. We'll chat next week.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving, guys. And I will say, one of my favorite things to watch right now is Simmons on offense, not because he's scoring touchdowns, but watching him target and dial in a guy that he's just about to waylay. It's one of my favorites.
There's got to be a bad feeling for that guy. Like, oh, boy, is he going to block me?
It was a breath of fresh air. Like going
and if you hesitate on defense, you're going to be shown on in the team meeting in the film room as well. You have to just go all in.
It was a breath of fresh air, though, on Sunday afternoon, looking through all of the melancholy post-game interviews. And then you hear Jeffrey Simmons saying, man, that was a dream come true. That was awesome. It was nice to hear at least a little bit of positivity in that locker room.
Just save it for a... That moment should impact the game in some way. It did not in any way. That was my only criticism of that play call.
If you wait until you're pretty much completely out of the game to try and pull some tricks out of your bag and say, well, let's throw the defensive tackle in.
Can they not use that to beat the Panthers? Can we please beat the Panthers with that play?
Now that that's on film.
I'm sure there's more.
There's got to be.
There's got to be a play.
The only way this team can score is off trick plays.
Come on. Bring it on.
He's going to throw it.
What's the next chapter? It's like the fridge back in 1985. You just kept waiting. What was Mike Ditka going to do next with the fridge? Like, so he had all kinds of stuff. Fridge threw a pass. Are we going to see Jeffrey throw a pass?
Never know.
You never know.
D. Mace has a couple of gadget plays in there, too.
Hey, I got a few. If you want to line me up.
A whole lot of back tricks.
Absolutely.
All right, Hutton, you are the very best. Appreciate you.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving, guys. Thank you.
Yep,
same to you, Thanksgiving, Hutton. Appreciate you. Jonathan Hutton, he is the very best. You can check out Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on the Outkick Network. But coming up next, Willie Donick has joined the party. We're going to break down the question that I opened up the show with, the question that I asked D. Mace. Where is this fan base? Is it frustration or is it apathy? And does this fan base really care about winning games throughout the rest of the season? We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, your thoughts as well. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.